Okay, here we go. We're up to Pesik. We're up to Perik. Yudala Pasik Yutas. This is part two. Yes, last week we went to the Pesukim the first round and went to the Mitzvah studied. So let's just review the Pesukim very quickly. Pasik Yutas. Zois Tia Chatas Mitzrayim. This will be the Chatas. Chatas of Yerim. This is going to be the punishment. The punishment for Egypt. The Chatas Kol Agoyim Asher Lo Yalu Lachoy Yitzchak Asukos. Pasik Habayim One Ate Yia Al Mitzilis Asus Kodesh. So we learned in Mitzvah Stav, who told us that the translation of the word Al is not to be taken literally. In this context, it means with regard. On that day, it will be Al regarding the bells. He translates the word Mitzvah to mean the bells of the horse. Why does it say Lashon Yachid? Al Mitzvah Hasus. Should it not say Al Mitzvah Hasusim? The bells of the horses? I have this suspicion that this prophecy is yet to be realized. And when this happens, we're going to look back and we're going to say that we had no clue as to what this thing meant, what we thought it meant, until it actually happened. What is really the mitzilos hasus? This has to mean something very significant, which we're totally clueless. In any event, it's going to be Kodesh LaHashem, V'hoya HaSiyos B'Reis HaShem Ki Mizrakim L'fnei HaMizbeach. The Siyos means the pots. The pots are going to be like the bowls. So it will appear that bowls are very common. There were an enormous number of bowls that were found in the Beis HaMikdash to be used for blood, to collect the blood of the Korbanos. But there were less number of pots used to cook meat, because not everyone had meat, not everyone brought a carbon. Why then were there so many bowls? I don't know, I really don't know. There's something, information that we are definitely missing. But the way the pasuk presents it, yeah?
Why wouldn't there be more
bowls? Of course, there are many bowls. We learned in the Kinois, we learned in the Yerushalmi, then the Beis Hamikdash, 93. What?
Each
shaved
gave Mizrak, right?
Kaf Achas. Mizrak Echad. Yes, there was a bowl for the Ketores. Kaf Achas. One spoon. Okay, but what's this?
Mizrak
Echad. But what's the significance here? I mean, why are we emphasizing this? I really do not know. But it says here, whatever it means that in the Beis HaMikdash, there's an abundance of vessels that are used to collect blood. That is what a mizrak is. A mizrak is a basin, is a vessel that one uses to collect blood. And there is an abundance of them. And there are less siras. Siras are pots to cook meat. What is the equation of how many pots there are to bowls? I have no idea. Maybe you'll suggest that there are many oilers. Maybe we just make some suggestions. In the Beis HaMikdash, there are different types of karbanos. There's a carbon oil, carbon chatos, every year the carbon shlamim. So the only the karbanos that are completely burnt do not need pots to cook its meat, because they are completely burnt. So I don't have no idea, but let's make an assumption, whether it's true or false, is that in the Beis HaMikdash there were many, many more oilois than there were karbonos that were eaten. A carbon chatos is eaten. A carbon asham is eaten. A carbon shlamim is eaten. A carbon toive is eaten. The vast majority of the karbonos are eaten, but a carbon oila is not. A carbon oila is completely burnt. There is no need to use a sira, a sear, for a carbon oila, because it's completely burned. There's nothing to cook. The other karbanos are cooked, but it would appear from this pasuk that until this point in time, they are going to be primarily oilos. If we go to the Beis HaMikdash and we ask the Koyam to give us some statistics, some data, this is industry secrets.
You're saying people do more maize than sugar?
What do you mean? Well, you don't bring a carbon for you don't bring a carbon for a maize. Person does not aver b'meiz, so there is absolutely no obligation to bring any carbon whatsoever.
What's the oil?
The oil is a gift. It's a gift. It happens to be that an oil is machaper for hirhure, for bad, evil machshavas. What is evil machshavas? I don't know what category that includes. Any, is it an evil machshav b'meiz, b'shoigeg, taiva? Is a person who wants to kill someone, who has hirhure, noshim? I have no idea. But technically speaking, there is no, the carbon oila is a gift. Is a gift. A carbon chatos is when a person commits an avera. It would appear that at this time there are many more oilos than there are chatos, or there are other korbanos. Let's assume it to be, let's say, there's 80% oilos and 20% everything else. So which an oila does needs a seer? It needs a basin. It needs a vessel to collect its blood. But a carbon oila does not need the other way around. A carbon oila needs a mizrak to collect its blood, but a carbon oila does not need a seer to cook its meat, because the meat is burnt on the mizbeach. So therefore, in the Beis HaMikdash, there are many, many more mizrakos than there are seeros. If the vast majority of korbanos in the Beis HaMikdash are oilois, every carbon needs a vessel for the blood, the shchit of the Kabbalah. But not every carbon needs a pot to cook its meat. But in the time of Mashiach, there's going to be a change, a shift in the proportion of korbanos. That's what this pasuk seems to be telling us, that there's going to be more korbanos from the other kind. Shalomim, chatos, asham, toida. What else am I leaving out? Okay, those korbanos need pots to cook their meat, in addition to a bowl needed to collect its blood. And this is what it says, in this day, there will be siwas b'reis Hashem, there will be pots for cooking meat, ka mizrakim, equivalent to mizrak, to bowls, to collect blood, lifnei ha-mizbeach, before the mizbeach. Pasuk ha-falaf ha-hoya, kol siwa b'yushalayim, every pot in Yerushalayim, Uvihuda, it will be Kodesh Lashem Tzavakas, it will be designated, every single pot will be holy. Uvo kol hazoivchem, all those who come to offer sacrifice, they will come, v'lachu mehem, they will take the meat from them, u'bishlu mevohem, and they will take these pots, and they will cook within them meat, obviously meat that's holy. You can't go cook in a pot, Kodesh, in an ordinary pot, you have to cook in a holy pot. Then it concludes, V'lo yechena'ani od b'reis Hashem tzavokas b'yamahu. We discussed at a great length, there will no longer be merchants. There will no longer be merchants in the b'reis Hashem tzavokas on that day. And that we explain to mean, there will no longer be many different ideas, that either it means that there will be, no one will get a license to open a business in Yerushalayim. All commerce will take place outside of Yerushalayim. If you want to go to the supermarket, you leave Yerushalayim, you get on a bus, or there are deliveries. You order online, because Yerushalayim is only a holy place. And then there's deeper parishes, and no one's going to abuse Torah and use Torah as a business.
But if you're going to be letting other people, normal citizens living in Yerushalayim, there's going to have to be some business dealings there to find where Yerushalayim is.
Why? Let me ask you, if a person today has a business meeting, we had the same discussion last Friday, I don't know. Person have a business meeting, want to make $1 million business deal today. Are you going to tell them to meet you in the Young Israel of Midwood in the back room to finalize the sign the contracts? No, this is not the place for it. This is a shul. There's an Arna Kodesh. There are Svarim. This is a Makom where you daven and you learn. This is not the right place. I'm doing a business deal that's $1 billion business deal. Don't you realize that if I succeed, I'll give tzedakah, not necessarily to this place, somewhere
ordinary,
else.
What? Ordinary citizens will need ordinary stores. They're going to need furniture. They need food.
So I just said, in this example I just gave you, when you're going to do this business deal of $1 billion, are you going to tell your partner, come meet me in shul, we'll sign the documents?
Right.
You probably will.
$1 billion.
But
okay.
But it's just not the right thing to do.
So what's going to be good? People are going to have to go out of Yerushalayim.
That's right.
Why?
You got it. Because the whole Yerushalayim will be saturated with Kedusha. Mm-hmm. You walk in the street, you're talking learning. You don't talk Devarim B'Teilim B'Divrei Chol. They're not going to sell the New York Times in Yerushalayim. It's not going to be available. You want to read the New York Times? You go outside Yerushalayim. You don't go and read the New York Times in the Beis Medrash. Probably one of the most horrifying experiences I had in my life. No, I shouldn't say that. But once upon a time, in my earlier years, I daven Musaf on Yom Kippur. Would you believe that? Adala Musaf. For people who probably, even if their life depended on it, they could not tell the difference between my Musaf and Hilfgat's Musaf. So we're dealing with people that were tone deaf, as tone deaf gets. Okay, as tone, if you ask them, which one is Hilfgat and which one is Levine, they couldn't tell you, even if their life depended on it. That's what we're dealing with, okay? Okay, so fine. I to me, it was a thrill nevertheless. They couldn't care less. About 10, 15, maybe 11, 12 people. To them, it didn't make a difference who was davening. So I got a thrill out of it. So good for whatever I got. But the people, they were not exactly, not everyone, they was exactly, from the Lamed Vav Tzadikim. You never know. Some davening, okay? And I see that they're really not interested. They really, you know, just the whole goal was just to get this done with already, get this over with. All right, fine. So I tried to do that for them, to get it over with as fast as I could. We're up to Unesane Toikev. Unesane Toikev Kedusha Sayoim Kihu Oyom Vinoira. Right, this is the moment of din. I'm davening, I'm trying to really, you know, give it my best. And of course, I'm moving along, we're moving along very quickly. And then for some reason, I turned around and I saw the guy, Sky, one of our 11, 12 people there at the shul. He was sitting there during the Sana Toikev, standing there in the back, holding in his hands the Jewish week.
Aye.
The Jewish week.
Aye.
Gary Rosenblatt.
Aye.
The Jewish week. And he's sitting there reading the Jewish week while I am trying to express myself during the Sana Toikev. And like I thought to myself, this you can't even make this up. You can't even make this up in the movie. Such a, are you out of your mind? It's now in the Sana Toikev. I can understand maybe if you're holding a chumash, you're learning a daf yomi, you know, maybe even the New York Times, maybe the Jewish week, are you out of your mind? You know what the Jewish week is all about? You ever see what goes on there in the Jewish week? It's clever. It's now no longer in print, I understand.
No, it's not.
Only electronic. Baruch Hashem. Miracles do happen.
Baruch Hashem. Gary,
good morning. But good morning. Is that the right thing to do? Is that the right thing to do during the Sana Toikev to read the Jewish week? No, it's not. It's definitely not in my book. In shul. No, we used to get the Jewish week. When we got it, I used to always go through it. Every Shabbos, I would go through, just skim through something I like, I would read, not read, whatever. Nothing with a Jew, you gotta know what's going on. You have to, you wanna see what other Jews think about themselves. You wanna see, you wanna learn what it means to be a self-hating Jew. You wanna know what it means to be a self-hating Jew, read the Jewish week. It's an intellectual experience to appreciate this. No problem. Does it belong in the Beis Medrash? No way. It doesn't belong in the Beis Medrash. It does not belong in the Beis Medrash. The same thing. Yerushalayim is a holy place. And Yerushalayim is no monkey business. You don't sit in Yerushalayim and read newspapers. You don't talk Devarim Shel Choral. You don't ask what's doing with the Arizona audit. You don't do that in Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim is an Ir HaKodesh. It's an era, there's a time and a place for everything. You want food? You go on your smartphone and you order. Uber Eats, it'll come deliver. But the place of business is not in Yerushalayim itself. I think it's the Ram Shutin. The same, just like in the Beis HaKnes, the Beis HaMedrash, the sanctity, so too in Yerushalayim, the whole Yerushalayim is saturated with Kedusha. Okay, let's see the Rashi. Of Kalman, welcome back. Beruchim haboim b'shem Hashem. What? No, he was away. You were in Eretz Yisrael. You were local, right? Where were you? Of Kalman, where'd you go? Kalman, the mayor wants to know. The mayor is on your case. He's on your case over here. CIA over here. He works, don't you know secretly he works for the CIA, mayor?
Learning the
Nishmas, Nochem, the mayor. Okay, who is he?
Uncle.
Your uncle.
Granduncle of the
Michelle
family.
Okay, so we learned to Nishmas, Lezech, Ulu Nishmas, one more time, Rav Nochem.
Ben Rav Meir.
Ben Rav Meir, Meir is
the
Shama.
He's from Rav Kushner.
got smich Rav Gusman. Rav Gusman was the Gadol Hadar. Gadol Hadar. You have to read Rav Gusman. Arif will put out a really good book. Really, it's a short. If you get a chance to read that biography, I'm really surprised. They were very. I can't. Rabbi Aaron Rav Kaffa. There's nothing he can say bad about this book. Sorry. The book is a very Zionistic, a very real portrayal, I think, of
because
Kaffa.
Gustav was a Rosh Hashiva in Lubavitch before he opened.
He was Rosh Hashiva in Lubavitch. He was a Zionist.
He was a Zionist.
And he was a Holocaust survivor, and he was a holy person, and he was a
god,
and he was of Chaim Oizes, the youngest member of Chaim Oizes Bezdin. He suffered enormous tragedy no one can even begin to fathom. He was the god of Hadar.
His
Torah knowledge was beyond belief. What?
He wore the plants.
Yes. A lot. Gusman, you got to read the book. It's an art scroll. He lost something while he was holding. He killed him while he was holding his child. While they killed him while he was holding him, they beat his child to death, and then they beat him almost to death, and then they threw him into I think it was a cesspool. Both him and the son, he picked up his son, and he cleaned him, he buried him, he took off his shoes and sold his shoes to buy bread, stale bread to feed his wife. Can you imagine? And when he came to Eretz Yisrael, he opened up a yeshiva, Seif Yamav, a small yeshiva. The yeshiva never really took off. And
it's still there.
Yes, it is.
Okay, whatever it is. But
it was
a small yeshiva.
Oh,
and,
but when you were talking about
Kamaitz,
he had a yeshiva.
No, but he moved there.
No.
That's Lubavitch. He was the Rosh Hashiva of Lubavitch. He would give Lubavitch a bracha. He was the Rosh Hashiva of Lubavitch. He wasn't Lubavitch, but they hired him. They hired him to be here and offered to be the Rosh Hashiva. Every single yeshiva in the world gave him an offer to be the Rosh Hashiva. He didn't want. He made his own little yeshiva. It doesn't seem from the book that it was very matzliach. They didn't have money like no one has money. And the kashrus, the food they ordered for the yeshiva, wasn't from the best hechsher. It wasn't like, you know, it wasn't you know, grade A. It was, you know, grade B minus, the hechsher. So they came, the mafia came to threaten, the mafia, Haredi mafia, came to, and they threatened him. They said, you know, the kashrus here, I think you should take us for your heksha, for this, for that.
Eretz Yisrael.
And then they said to him, you know, this is the mafia, the Haredi mafia. If you listen to us and you take us as your, whatever we're grade A, for your heksha, you know, we'll speak nice of you. We'll use our influence to give you a good reputation among the Haredim. And if you don't blackmail, and if you don't take us for your upgrade, your hechsher to our you know, provide us with the, give us the business, you know, we will we'll create for you a very damaging. We'll give you bezyonis. In other words, if you take us, we'll give you kavod, and if you don't give us the business, we'll put upon you bizyonos. So he said to these idiots, he says, Kindalach, you're threatening me with kavod and bizyonos? Let me tell you what kavod is, let me tell you what bizyonos is. Kavod? I know what kavod is. With all humility aside, I was in my early 20s, and I was appointed to be a member of the Beis Din of Rav Chaim Oizer Gradinsky. You don't have any what that meant to be a dayan in the Beis Din of the undisputed Gadol Hadar. We was in Vilna.
Yeah.
You massig what the covet, that covet, what that was, that covet I had. You're telling me that you Kindalach, you 30-year-olds, you're gonna go and you're gonna write in the newspaper, I'm a good guy. I need your nonsense, your garbage. You're threatening me with COVID? And if not, bezyonis. You know, let me tell you the bezyonis. I was holding my child, Mayor, in my hands during the war. And the Nazis, they grabbed me and they grabbed my son and they beat my son. While I was holding on to him, they beat him to death. My only son, their daughters, but my Ben Yochi. They beat him to death while I was holding on to him. And then they started to beat me and they nearly killed me. And they threw us into into a cesspool, the schmutz, and I took him out. I had to clean him. I buried him, and I took off his shoes to pawn his shoes to buy a piece of stale bread for my wife, so she shouldn't starve to death. Do you know the bizarreness how I felt at that time in my life? And you're gonna threaten me, you idiots, with bizarreness? That is one little story.
You hear, there was a third thing you said, you guys are Bulgarian, and I'm a Bulgarian.
That's what he said. Well, no. who? And then he used to go to the parade, one of the parades of Yom Yerushalayim. It was Yom Yerushalayim, could it be?
Yeah.
Yom Yerushalayim, or maybe it was another. And he would go and to the parade with such hana to watch the parade, to participate. And the Haredim, they went out of their mind. The Gadol Hadar is going to the Israeli Day Parade. It's the equivalent of the Israeli Day Parade to go watch the Tzionim march in the parade. They were pulling their hair out of their head. He couldn't kill us. He says the hana of seeing Jewish children march. I lost a child. They murdered to see these little children march, to see Jewish children. It gave him such hana to see Klal Yisrael rebuild. And he couldn't kill it. He thought these guys were off the wall. Okay, and it's a remarkable book. It really is. Just because it has the article stamp on it doesn't mean Rabbi Aaron Rakefet can say anything bad about this book. It's a really, really... Unfortunately, there's not much about him. There's not all that much. He managed to hide himself, to escape the revelation that he really deserves. There's not really much. This book itself is a small book. And it was printed at great effort to uncover, to put together. Someone was very loyal to him and actually went through enormous effort to put this book together way after he died. But it's really, everyone talks about him, but no one really, really did him justice to write him up. But he had an incredible life, incredible person. You see, for all the Gedolei Yisrael, they were afraid of him. Lubavitch Rebbe made him the Rosh Hashiva. You know what that means? Lubavitch, the Rosh HaYeshiva, Erev Yom Kippur, in public, would give a bracha to the Rebbe. There's no such thing as giving a bracha today, in today's day and age, in the 21st century. A Rebbe, should humble himself before another person, out of your mind? A Rebbe? You know a Rebbe today that would go to a ceremony where he would humble himself in front of another person? Unheard of. It's unheard of. That's a steer to being a Rebbe. But in Lubavitch, Chabad, that's the way they do things. Chabad is the meaning of Chabad is the Rebbe, and it's a Rosh Shiva, and Erev Yom Kippur, the Rosh Shiva of Rosh Shiva gives a bracha in front of the whole Kahal to the Rebbe. The Rebbe is machnia himself in front of the Rosh Shiva. And I think was it the Riatz or was it Rav Nachman Mendel? I don't know which one it was. Probably the Riatz. Must have been the Riatz, the one before Rav Nachman Mendel. He says, you are the Rosh Shiva of Chabad. And that meant that the Riatz, the Rebbe, is Machdiya himself, Erev Yom Kippur, to the Kavanah Torah of the Rosh Shiva. You know what that is? It doesn't exist anymore. That's from a bygone era. That's like, goodbye. Okay, there's a whole world that's totally... We live today in the world of make-believe. We live today, it's amazing how... It's whatever, that's what it is. There's a lot of good today, don't get me wrong. You know, a lot of things that we have today that our previous generations cannot hold a candle to. Some of the things that go on in this world today in our generation are beyond belief. Chesed, hidden chesed, secret chesed, Mesiras Nefesh, beyond belief. The previous generations wouldn't even begin to fathom. So it's not all bad. There are elements like everything else in life. I was once in a store. There was a very big. How do you say it? Mechaneches, a very big. There was a woman, a very chasher woman, who wasn't a young woman, who was the head of a very prominent woman in Chinuch HaBanos, and I was eavesdropping. The best. By the way, if you want to eavesdrop, the best place to eavesdrop is in the Judaica stores. That's where you get the most juicy lashon hara. And she was there, and there was a woman there talking to her. And then we have this conversation. And then at one point she said, tell me, what's the difference between the girls today and the girls from years ago? And she said, she just says, it's very different today. It's not better, not worse. It's different. The girls from the previous years, they had milos that the girls today do not have. But the girls today have milos the girls in the previous years, they don't have. So it's a mixed bag. And it's not fair to criticize. I just really got on the topic. I read this incredible article in Mishpacha magazine 2 weeks ago. My sister pointed this out to me. Hashem must read it, Rabbi Chanan Wasser. In Mishpacha magazine, not this past Shabbos, 2 weeks ago, maybe you can get it online, there was an article about Rabbi Chanan Wasser. It's an amazing, amazing article. Yeah, I always knew Rabbi Chanan Wasser. I always knew about him. I know, and everyone knows the story. Everyone knows the story how right before he was killed, because this year it's 80 years. This year is 80 years since his murder. And when he was murdered, there's a very famous story, it's a very important story, where he was there with all the people they rounded up a whole group, and he told them that Hashem, the fact that he murdered, obviously means that Hashem holds them to be tzaddikim. And Hashem holds them to be tzaddikim, and we're korbanos. And when it comes to a korban, machashava is critical, thought is critical. And we have to now be mitaher our thoughts. And when we die on Kiddush Hashem, we have our machshavas have to be pure. And our death, the more pure we our thoughts are at the time of death, will be a greater benefit, siyata deshmaya, for the she'eris ha'pleita in America. In America. He came to America right before he was killed. He came to America for 17 months. And hindsight is 20/20. And we now know in hindsight that the people that he came in contact with turned out to be the builders, to a very large degree, of Torah in America. He traveled the entire country from beginning to end to raise money, but in the process he came in contact with Moshe Sherer, of Shanghal Mendelovich, Mike Tress, and a whole long list of people. And they all said, when they met him, when he was here, it was a turning point in their life. Their whole hashkafa, their whole drive to help Klal Yisrael totally changed in that meeting they had with him. It was a meeting like none other. So, you know, you read, big deal. And now you look back at the people who said that, and you look at what they accomplished, you look at America today. When he came here for 17 months, he came to feed his talmidim that were literally starving to death. But in hindsight, HaKadosh Baruch Hu sent him here to manage to plant the seeds, to meet the people, and to be mashpia upon them, that they should lead Klal Yisrael. It's awesome. This article is a masterpiece. The bigger part of the masterpiece that I could not get enough of is, you know, in those days, he died and he was killed in 1941. So when he came to America right a little bit before that, in 38, 39. And when he came, they told him, America is treif. Even the stones in America are treif. America, you read this in all of the books, America is the treif of Medina. Schmutz, money, Shabbos, there's nothing, it's a midbar. That's what everyone said. And when he came back to Europe, you know what he said? He said, I totally disagree. He said, I saw their young people, tamimim. They want so much to learn, so much to be taught. They need someone to help them. And he said, the potential of America is beyond. When he said all these things he wrote there, what he said about America. Do you know what that is? Go try to find another girl that had such beautiful and powerful praise for America. Everywhere, all America, schmutz, treif, even the stones. How many times have you heard that word? I heard a holy hundred. Even America, even the stones are treif. It's just the opposite. Mamish. he was so unique and so rare, where he says no to Minim, their potential. He says he found their voice that are just as good as in Lita, no different. It's incredible how the ability to look at the good, not always to look at the negative. Today, people, America, we have today, everyone, they know Gedolei Yisrael, there's no nothing. Okay, so we don't have what they are. But today, there are things in America, in this community, and all over in America, they never had anything near some of the malice that we have today, generations ago. So it's, look, learn from Ruchanan. Learn from Ruchanan. It's not always kedai to be mevatel. It's not always kedai to be mevatel. There's an incredible value in looking for the bracha. Let's see the Rashi. Rashi over here is pasuk yitay zoyis taras zoyis tiyed oynish, the punishment of Mitzrayim, the oynish, the punishment kol agoyim kumo she'amal and eshnem is the pasuk loy aleichem yiyeh hagosh. It's in the previous pasuk that it's not going to be upon you to get gosh. It's a continuation. I'm still sasus al. Rashi over here comes to disagree. I don't know if he's coming to disagree, but he's saying over here, that doesn't say the bells. He's just giving you over here, he's rationally giving you more insight. This obviously is begging, this pasuk is begging us, darsheni, expound upon me. What in the world does this mean? And you're going to say concerning the bells, al kodesh l'ashem. Oh, you have nothing else to say. The bells of the horse, of the horse. What about your gold and your jewelry and all of your assets? That's kodesh. How much does a bell cost already? You go buy a bell for a horse. It's so cheap. That's the only thing you can be makdish to kodesh baruch hu. Go on Amazon. How much does it cost to buy a bell for a horse? I don't think it's the best seller. I don't think it costs too much. $5-$10. Oh, this is the donation. You're trying to say the Jews are going to be in those times so cheap. They're going to be misers. The most they're willing to give in the Beis HaMikdash is $3.99. And don't charge me tax either. $3.99. That's the most they're willing to go give to the Beis HaMikdash.
I need more than one.
So it'll be 50 of them. That's the Ganze Gedula, what it says over here. They're going to dedicate. Regarding the bell of the horse, oh, we're going to give it a donation. Really, really. And what about all the billions of dollars stashed away in your once upon a time Swiss bank accounts? And what about your multi-million dollar mansions and your home in Florida and your home, your apartment in Eretz Yisrael and your private jet? No. Don't go there. Don't go there. That's mine. You can have a bell. Give you a little bell. If I don't have a bell, I don't have any horses, because the horses smell. So I'll go on Amazon, I'll buy a bell from South Korea. They sell bells for their horse. That will give to as a donation. What in the world does this mean? What's going on over here? This is the donation, the big gedul of Yasalovo. Ein Hamrika Hazeh Oimer Ella Darshuni. Explain to me. No one's really giving us perush. Rashi a little bit breaks open some of the symbolism of what this means by telling us this is not a bell that you hang on the tail of the horse. It's the bell that goes between its eyes. Oh, between its eyes. All right, now already we're talking. Vision, direction, guidance. Now already we're talking business because we all know that life is all about direction. Who is ahead of the game? You have two people in a race, and one person is walking like a snail, but he's going in the right direction. And the other one is at a supersonic speed, but he's going in the wrong direction. Who's gonna win the race? The one that's going like a snail in the right direction. If you're going in the right direction, eventually you'll get there. If you're very, very fast and powerful and mighty, but you're going in the wrong direction, who cares? You have two people. You give me your plane, and I'm giving you a car, and you have a race to get to California. So when they both get in, and the guy in the car, he follows the directions. He goes there, and the guy gets in the plane. He can get there in only a few hours, but he goes in the wrong direction. He goes over the Atlantic, and then he runs out of gas. He runs out of fuel, and what happens? He's finished. The guy in the car knew it takes him a week, 2 weeks to get to his destination, go stop, but at least he went in the right direction. So here it's saying that when they're going to be makdish over here, l'asalavu is, the horse represents gashmias, telling you a drush. Once Rashi already broke open this pasuk, by Rashi telling the Mitzvah didn't say this. The Mitzvah just says, oh, bells, jingle bells. Bells, what is the bells in Eretz Yisrael, the Beis HaMikdash, in Eretz Yisrael, the Chas Hashem. What's the bell? So what's I'm sure they by bells, the bells of Chassidim, they probably say, oh, this is now you see this goes to show we're gonna lead when Mashiach comes. It's not gonna be Lubavitch, it's not gonna be the Litvaks, it's not gonna be the Tzioinim, it's gonna be us. The bells of Chassidim, the bells of, because it says here, Al Metzilos Hasus, okay? The bells. Who's the horse dog? I don't know. But no, this is a joke. But let's talk real. Rashi opens up. Rashi says, it says Al Hanikishos, the banging, Shetolin Lasus Lenoi Bein Einav. Now, I want to say the Jewish, what the significance of this means is a horse very often represents the spitz of Gashmis. That's what it, in ancient times in Egypt, that was the big commodity. It's like, you know, it's a sign of wealth. If you have an Egyptian horse, wow, that's like, you know, a nice car. So today it would be, you know, today a car is not enough anymore. You have to have a Tesla, and even that's garnished. You have to have a private jet. Today, among the billionaires, what is a sign of, really, it's really talking about really true. What today is a sign of real wealth? Think about it. Real wealth today is if you have a private jet. Is that not, I really believe that to be a real sign of real wealth. I'm a different person. I have a private jet. You know what a private jet costs? This is like it's not to be believed. Not to be believed. What? A private jet is really in a league by itself, to have a private jet. That's a sign of wealth. That was the equivalent in ancient times of having a horse. A sus from Egypt. This is a private jet. What do you do with it? What do you do with your private jet? You take the jet and you go to the Caribbean. You go to Hawaii. You go to some island no one ever heard of on vacation to enjoy yourself. La'asalavo, there's going to be a different navigation system on the horse, on the gashmis. The bell that goes in front of the horse, which is its guidance system, is going to be dedicated. The only reason you have this private jet is to serve Hashem. Someone needs to go to Eretz Yisrael for a mitzvah, you go on my jet. All gashmis will be sacred l'Hashem. The only reason why you have a private jet is you need to do a chesed. How are you going to get to Eretz Yisrael and go get a ticket? This here, take the jet, go right away. I know during COVID, it was amazing. I know during COVID, I know Rachman's son was a family, we lost their mother, someone local. And it was COVID, and to get into Eretz Yisrael was impossible. It was pretty much lockdown. And there was someone who knew them, and he said, no problem, you go on my jet. I'm paying for everything. The whole family, you go to Eretz Yisrael, you're going to bury Eretz Yisrael, you go on my private jet. It didn't work out. You know why? And it was how? We're Cyprus. They don't want to let the family go, so you go on my jet. They found out a way you can go to Cyprus. I'm going to take you on my jet to Cyprus. And in Cyprus, you're going to go, you get a local. That you could go, we can get you locally, we can get you to Eretz Yisrael, and we're going to wait for the kavur until we get there. That's Gimelus HaMashiach. The Metzilos Hasus, the guidance system, the purpose. Where is this jet going? To the Caribbeans? To Hawaii? This is going to get people who need to get where they need to go, L'shem Shemayim. You know, that event did not work out because the problem was the government demanded that you had got to be out of the country within 24 hours. And they were all ready to go, Mamish all ready to go, and then they made the government made a loophole. No, if you come to Eretz Yisrael, you have to be out of here within 24 hours. We don't want COVID to spread this, that. You can be here for 24 hours. They could not work out the logistics after all this enormous gymnastics that they pulled off. They cannot finish that last leg, that last part, to get them out of the country in 24 hours, so the whole thing fell apart. They were not able to go. But it's an amazing thing how a person keeps looking forward, and that's Yilos HaMashiach. The Mitzilos HaSus is, the Sus is a symbol of Gashmius, not just Gashmius, the Spitz of Gashmius, the ultimate Gashmius.
More like
the Chamor, but... Chamor is Chomer. But a Sus represents represents developed. Chamor is undeveloped Gashmius. Chamor literally means matter. It means this potential. It's pure Gashmius, but has not yet been molded, has not been fashioned into them. A Sus represents power, might, beauty. Okay, horses were beautiful creatures. These horses were supposed to be exotic, beautiful. Color, different colors, and different this, different that, and they were represented health and power and might. Incredible, incredible koyach. You know, these horses, they're very scary creatures. There was a video, I don't know if you saw the video, I couldn't believe this video. I watched it 5 times. It was in Germany. And you know, this Pride Month, this month, right? It's all about the rainbow, the marble. June is all the marble. You gotta see this video. These policemen on going down the horse, so they painted on the road a rainbow. Like they know that they have Black Lives Matter in America, so in different countries they paint on the street a rainbow on the gutter, a whole section. And these policemen are going on their horses, and the horses, two horses, and they see the rainbow on the gutter. You gotta see this video. They refuse to step on it. Refuse. And the guy starts hitting the horse. It is like Mamish, a biblical story. It's a biblical story. He Mamish starts hitting the horse. And the horse is like, it's all started. So it basically it goes around it. It refused to go on. It was terrifying. Like everyone that's in the circle and of the sword, it's like, whoa, what in the world is going on here? What is the horse know that we don't know? What's going on over here? Unbelievable, huh? It's unbelievable. But Vahoyah, you know, it's because the source taka represents Shetufei Zima. Zimras Susin. There's something about that video that's very, you know, Zimras Susin Zimrasa. Because I'll say the Spitz of Taiva is capturing a horse. That's the release, the Zera. I mean, when everyone's talking about Zinu, someone that's out of control. He's
right.
totally promiscuity on steroids. Someone is totally out of control. The marshal is a horse. Zimras, Susin, Zimras, and their discharge. We're talking about human beings. The discharge of this human being is like the discharge of a horse. It's just addicted, totally wiped away. And where does that lead to? It leads to Mishkav Zohar, right? That Mishkav Zohar represents the Spitz of Haifa. And the horses who represent the Zimra Susan, they can't even go on that rainbow? They're terrified from it? Wow. What's going on here? And this wasn't scripted. This was obviously something very, very bizarre. This has to be understood what's going on over there. Back to our Rashi. Rashi is saying a pelvic thing. Al hanikisha, the nikisha is the banging. Shetoylin lasus lenoy for beauty. Bein enof. He's opening up a world over here. This bell is not just a bell, stama bell. It's a bell that goes between its eyes, and this bell is what's giving it its direction, its hadrocha, its guidance system. Instead of guiding and using the gashmius for your own personal pleasure and fulfillment of your taiva, the guidance is being used for kodesh, to guide, to direct and exploit the gashmius for one purpose only, to serve Hashem. Af oisan yadishu lasois klei shares, they're also going to sanctify utensils, lemizrakim, for ledom, bowls for the karbonos, ulesiois, and pots, Levashel besides Vachim Larev in abundance. Mitzilas Asus. And Bachal, you want to help us with this French word?
Yeah.
Old French.
Bells.
Bowls.
Bells.
Bells. Bells will last. Okay. Tan ti. Whatever that word is. Okay. Balas. The Haya Hasirois, next Rashi. Shehein Hoyu Ladashin is Adeshin. This was used Ladashin as Adeshin. So he's saying over here a new interpretation. This is not what it's in the Mitsudais. Over here he's saying over here this past, the word Sirius in this past refers to shovels. Since when does the word Sirius mean shovels? That were used. Ledashain is to sweep es hadeshen, the ash off the mizbeach. Afhem you shall zahav shall kesef. They're going to be gold. This is actually a Gemara. The Gemara says that you're not allowed to. The Gemara says that you don't. That you have to. That you're not allowed to. You have to have rachmanus on the minun shel Yisrael. When you leave the shul, make sure you turn off the lights. On Yiddish geld. Okay, you have to have rachmanus. It doesn't come easy to raise money. You have to be very sparing. And if there's no need to have in the Beis HaMikdash gold and silver shovels. Gold and silver shovels get ruined very quickly. They are damaged. So if you go, even though it looks very nice for the pictures, when you go and everyone is oil regal and they're snapping away with their smartphones, pictures to take them souvenirs to see what goes on in Beis HaMikdash, it looks very nice, gold and silver shovels, but you know it costs quite a lot of money. Where is that money going to come? Who's going to do the fundraising to raise that kind of money? Every day they should have a new gold and silver shovel because it costs a lot of money. So the Gemara says you're not allowed to. You have to have racham upon the money on the moinam shel Yisrael. And you have to be cheap. There are certain things. Ein anius b'makom. There's a balance. Ein anius b'makom mashiras. You have to have a magnificent shul. But you have to realize there are certain things that are a continuous strain on the community and that you have to be cheap. It's a very difficult balance when you spend and when you become a miser in running an institution. Usually, you put up a building, it's a one-time expense. One-time expense, you go for the jugular. But when it comes to the day-to-day, you don't go serving yeshiva katana in China. You don't serve children food on China. You serve them on the cheapest disposable utensils you can get. That it should be less, the least expense. But that's only in the world we live in today. It says over an incredible principle, the La'asalava, there's going to be money is garnished. Money is nothing, and they're going to have even gold and silver shovels. That's how dedicated people are going to be, and the whole rule of fundraising. The whole approach to fundraising is going to change La'asalava. Shehein hoi l'dash, l'deshne afhim yu shal zover shal kesel, kim izroa kim ha'shel l'fnei ha'mizbeach. Like the Mizrachim Shalom Zedech, Pasuk Hafalov, Lo Yeh Khanani, Lo Yeh Tzarchu Lischoyra. They're not going to need a Khanani. They're not going to need merchandise. Kmo Khin O Neho Nichbade Oretz. Her merchants were the most distinguished ones of the world. Dover Acher, Ein Kam Oni. There are two interpretations. First of all, he says, Rashi's words are always very precise. And he says, when I translated the pasuk with the Mitsudas, I told you it means they're not going to be merchants. That's not what Rashi really says. Rashi says, Lo yitztarchu l'schora. They're not going to need merchandise. What's the difference between not needing merchants and not needing merchandise? So I learned until now, of course, business, you need business. Nothing changes. Everyone needs a nice suit, a nice new shiny smartphone, and a nice dining room table, nice chandelier. It's just that it's not the place. Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh is not the place where you engage in business. Yerushalayim is a sacred place. Do the business outside. Go to Tel Aviv. Go to America. Go somewhere else to go engage in business. That's not what he says here. Rashi says, I don't need a new car. I'll use a scooter. I'll walk. I don't need a chandelier in my house. I'm happy with an old-fashioned light bulb. I don't need the latest smartphone. I'll use a flip phone. They're not going to need lo yitztarchu l'schoira. Is that what Rashi is saying? They don't need this. It's just irrelevant for them. Their whole frame of mind is completely different. They have no desire for all of the gadgets and the nice things of this world. Is that what Rashi is saying? So isn't it very interesting that in ancient times they lived such primitive lives? I'm sure you also the Flintstones, right? The Flintstones. Meet the Flintstones. That's how our ancestors lived, pretty much. They lived, you learn the Mishnayos, you learn the Gemara. They lived such primitive way of living. Why didn't they have a desire to invent technology? Why was there the industrial revolution, the age of technology? Why did it take so long to happen? You're going to tell me it's all Kabbalah? No, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, they say that. They say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in our generation, let's say you go back 100 years, because he opened up in Shemayim vistas of Chochmah to mankind. We were able to discover technology and able to advance at a rate that makes our ancestors look like the Flintstones. Okay, that's a Kabbalistic approach. It's a Kabbalistic approach that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he only opened up knowledge of how to harness technology only in our generation, let's say the last 100 plus years. What happened for the last 5,000 years? Where they all went to sleep? They weren't so smart. It took them 5,000 years to invent how to go use a light bulb. They couldn't figure out how to make a light bulb. Only Benjamin Franklin, only he was able to figure out 200 years ago. He was only the first one. What happened until that point in time in Israel? People were so ignorant. Why? So I'll pick Kabbalah, you tell me. Well, that's right. There's such a thing. There is the Shemayim. If they decided to open up to this world knowledge, to understand science, and to invent. Okay, if you go for that, MS, I accept it. But there's another element, and that is they had no interest. They just had no interest. It didn't interest mankind. Man, until a few hundred years ago, had much more interest in God, or in fighting against God, rebelling against God.
Fighting each other.
Fighting. It's not that they didn't have the ability that was there for them to come up with how to make a light bulb. They weren't interested. They just did not want. You know, in Shidduchim, the question is, do you want to get married? Do you want? Let's get down to the core of the matter. Do you want? Do you want? When it came to technology, the man was much, much, much more preoccupied with Hashem, understanding religion, either connecting to Hashem or no, finding a way to rebel against Hashem, to worship other gods. At a certain point in time, that came to an end. Man today is, you don't see today among the Goyim, you're not going to convince me, I can't convince me, watching all of these things. Goyim there are many good Goyim. I'm not Chas V'Shalom saying bad about Goyim. They're definitely religious, devout Goyim all over the world, who really are good, sincere people. Not everyone is a Meshugana. But you don't see an intensity. You don't see an intensity of religion like you read about existed in previous generations. The time of the First Crusade. Okay, there was the people who caused the trouble with bloodthirsty Meshugayim, but there was a church, and there was an intensity on every street corner. There was another church. You don't have that today. They're just not interested. So what are they interested in? They're interested in other things. They're interested in themselves and technology. So it's a lot has to do with what do you want. Here, if you want to be very homiletic, and it says uchanani, you want to take Rashi to an extreme, and you want to say v'lo yek chanani, there's no longer be a chanani, oy b'beis Hashem tzivaka, it's v'yamuhu, you know what it means? They're just not interested in gashmius in the Beis HaMikdash, in Yerushalayim. They're going to live with the old-fashioned ovens. I don't need electricity. I don't need a fancy suit. What do you mean? It's available. All of these beautiful things are available. You're right. But we have the real deal here. We have Hashem. We have no clue what these words mean, what this means, because we don't have today in our existence the Hashras Hashchina. We don't have Hashem's divine presence with us. So we don't have Hashem with us, so we're here in this world, so what's there to have pleasure in this world? A nice car, a nice clothing, good food, fun. Yeah, a little ruchnius also. You dive in, and you learn, you make a seum, and you do this, you do that. We're blind. If we had the real deal, if HaKadosh Baruch Hu came down to this world and rested even a small amount of his divine presence in this world, and we were taken by Hashem's divine presence. Who cares about the gashmis? Of course, you have to have gashmis, the mitzvahs. You have to have four corners. You have to have this. Yes, that keli v'anveyu. You have to be nice. V'chulu v'chulu. But it comes a point in time. I did a mitzvah. I sanctified Hashem with the gashmis. I don't need all the crazy things. It's an overkill. I don't need it. I can live a primitive life. I can live like the Flintstones. And I can be much happier than anyone else in the world who has all of the gadgets that the world can possibly provide. Rashi says something very different than the Mitzvahs. Rashi, there's not going to be lo yitztaruchu l'schoira. There's no need. What do you want to give me? You want to give me an air conditioner in Yerushalayim because it's sweltering hot? I don't need an air conditioner. I don't even know that it's hot.
Speak for yourself.
I don't even know that it's hot. I'm not even speaking about I need you to know where I need you to so I'm just playing with you. You know what I'm playing with you. I don't need the air conditioner.
Me too.
I don't need the air conditioner because Hashem is here. Hashem is here. I'm within His presence. It's hot, cold, but I don't even know what you're talking about. Your mind is not occupied with these things. I don't need it. I don't need it. Will they have it? Doesn't Sifl have it? The whole world will have it, obviously. Okay. But the Pasuk Rashi is saying something so powerful. That's what it means. Kanani means a merchant. But he says over here, it doesn't mean a merchant. It means what the merchant engages in, the chevtza, the merchandise. It's totally irrelevant. And then he says another interpretation, Dover Acher, Ein Kanani. Could you imagine going to the Kosel HaMaravi and no one coming up to you and saying, stalker? can you imagine such a thing? I can imagine such a thing.
I
like to, right? To say, Ein Kan Oni. This lo yihyeh, there will not be Kenani. Rashi says, the word is like a double negative. Double negative is a positive. That would mean there would be a lot of poor people. Below, ain't kind of like double negative, there can be many more people, who knows? But it's not what it says, Rashi. Rashi says that it's a mutrikin, ain't kan, chof and the nun means, well, maybe what it means is chof nun means kan. Ani is a poor man. Velo yihye. So kanani is a mutrikin. Velo yihye kan ani. There will not be here in Jerusalem a poor man. Lo yihye kan. Oni, there will not be here a poor man. Now, here's the problem. The problem is, it says this goes against what it says in the Torah explicitly. Ki lo yechdal evyon mikerev haaretz. Ki lo yechdal. That is the pasuk, which is in a few words, is a rejection of communism and socialism. Okay, that pasuk is that's Hashem's response. Always see that with a new invention, a new idea in this world. What does the Torah say about it? You gotta go, yes, the Gedolei Yisrael. What's a Torah perspective? Give us a Torah perspective on this new fad, this new ism that is circulating in the world. Communism, it sounds like a great idea, no? What's so terrible? It sounds like a great idea, communism. Everyone has what they need, there's no stuff. The whole theory, the whole doctrine of communism, it sounds pretty good. Hashem says, this is stupid. This is foolish. Why? Because the whole communism is built on the premise that there's no one is poor. That's the underlying principle, the underlying pinnings of communism, socialism. I don't even know what the difference is between the two.
Not much.
What's the sale? I don't know what. But the basic premise is every single person will have what they need. No one will starve. No one will be deprived. Everyone is guaranteed to have food, shelter. The country is strong. No one is poor. And just redistribute the wealth fairly, equitably, equally. Sounds like a great idea, right? That's what it sounds like. The Torah says it doesn't work like that. Inbuilt into this world is something called poverty, whether you like it or not. And this poverty will never go away. It's part of the DNA of this world. There are poor people. Ki lo yechdal evyon mikerev haaretz. It will never cease to exist in evyon from the face of this earth. And evyon doesn't just mean someone who was on the program. It means destitute, homeless, People literally homeless, tohev lakol, have nothing. Now, if you have people like that, you certainly are going to have people that are not, have not reached Rahman Islam that level, but just, you know, they're worried sick. What am I going to do? How am I going to make money? How am I going to survive?
Just that you don't have it everywhere, but you have it somewhere.
You have it somewhere. You have, believe me, you be shocked when you have it right in front of your eyes. Sometimes you have it. You don't even realize it's all over the place. That's a pretty, if you're going to try to make a system to circumvent, you made a big mistake. Capitalism, the Torah, there are so many riots in the Torah. The Torah promotes a capitalist society. My father is very big into this. There's so many indications, because how do you set up an economic system in a Jewish state? In a Torah, I shouldn't say Jew, the Torah state. We don't have today a Torah state. Eretz Yisrael is not a Torah state by any standards, by any means, and nor do we want it to be. Nor do the Gedolei Yisrael, they don't know way, don't even try. Until Mashiach comes, don't even have any chasagas to even try to make a state in this world as a Torah state. There should be a total, even in Eretz Yisrael, most of the Gedolei, the vast majority, wanted to be separation of church and state. They want to be a model. Problem in Eretz Yisrael, you know all the problems in Eretz Yisrael is that it's not. Problem in Eretz Yisrael is that it's not separation of church and state, because there's too much Torah in the state. That's why we have a lot of problems in Eretz Yisrael, because once it's a Torah state, then it's a recipe for disaster. If Eretz Yisrael would be set up as a capitalist state like America, I think many people think it would be a lot with the same principles of separation of church and state, total separation, we would probably, to a degree, be better. There would have to be, of course, exceptions made, because the Kedushas Ha'aretz does not tolerate certain things. Okay, so you have to be very careful in that statement to make separation church, which means, oh, you could have a gay parade going to the Kesel HaMaravi. No, you can't do that. There's the element of Kedushas Ha'aretz. And Kedushas Ha'aretz does not tolerate abominations. But, on the other hand, it does not mean that it has to be a halachic state. It doesn't have to be a halachic state. There can be Din D'Malchus Sedina. Okay, this is a big, big topic now for now. But over here, there is such a principle of capitalism. And capitalism, the very definition of capitalism, in contrast to socialism, allows poverty. It allows poverty. You can be as poor as you want.
Socialism defines poverty.
Everyone knows that in socialism, communism, it's not that the goal is known as there's no everyone is poor. It's a make-believe. The goal is that no one should be poor. But what is the result of communism? Everyone is poor. Everyone is poor. Who's rich? I mean, what happens to all the money? The corrupt breeds corruption. The people on the top, they're super, super over the top rich. And everyone in the entire country is poor. It's a horror. Capitalism allows those who want to work hard, they have money. Those who don't are poor. And then there's an issue of giving tzedakah, and they're being in Evian, and then there are issues of helping people to see what it means to be successful, and encourage them to follow that method. It's a whole psychology. The Torah seems to very much approve and promote a capitalist economic system. And what does it say at the very end of this passage? Liyos HaMashiach, V'lo Yehiye Chenani, Lo Yehiye Kan Oni. There's no one's going to be poor over here. Wait a minute, but it says in the Torah, "Lo yilki lo sechtal evyon mikerev ha'aretz." And when it says the word "aretz," it certainly includes Eretz Yisrael, because that's the ikar aretz. We have a contradiction. So you're going to tell me, no, there's a chilek between an evyon and an ani?
No.
That's a forced answer.
But
so,
the
yeah.
Pasuk is not saying everywhere on earth.
V'lo yihi yekan.
Kan.
Okay.
You
have to answer the question. I don't have the answer. The question is the question. I don't have an answer, but obviously you have to figure out a solution. But it's noteworthy to... What?
A meal.
No, but it says... It says... And here it says Vlo Yihye Kan.
It's Kan.
You say Kan only here in this location. Yeah,
it's
not noticed.
Base Hashem.
1%.
Only in the base Hashem. So you're saying that this is actually giving an answer. When it says the Karav Haaretz, Karav means the earth, the globe. And here we're talking about Yerushalayim, the base Hashem, Yerushalayim, Hakadosh, the base Hamidosh, in the inner sanctum of Hakadosh Baruch Hu. There's the Gemara. They'll tell me another chiddush. There's going to be an Ani and an Avion. There's not going to be Avionim, but there's going to be Aniyim. What kind of economic system is that where you have homeless people and then you have rich people? There's no one in between. Polarized.
Those are our cities.
The rich get richer and the poor get poorer. Here it says there's no Ani. So there's no Ani. There are three Madregas. There is an Oshir, an Ani, and an Evion. The Pasuk says, Kilo Yechtal Evion. There's not going to be, will be Evion. Rich, we know, there will always be rich. That's the Birchas Yitzchak. Bracha, Mital, Shemayim, there's going to be Bracha. And here there's not going to be an Ani. So it's telling us that in Mos HaMashiach there's going to be polarization. The rich get richer and the poor get poorer. There's rich and there are destitute and there's no middle class. Is that what it's saying? Well, that's happening in America. That's always been a problem in America. America's been going like that for a long time. Yeah?
I'm kind of afraid to bring this up, but in the Galatian Bible, they make a big deal that he comes to the Harabayas and he throws over the money changers' tables. He doesn't like money changers in the temple.
Who?
Yoizel.
That it's not befitting the kedusha of the Harabayas to have people
money.
Yeah,
we got a point. He had a good point. He has a good point.
They make a big deal out of it.
Okay, there is a point.
But
yeah, okay, it has to be understood. It has to be understood.
It
has to be understood in the right context. And everything about them is just sheker. The more you discover, the more it's just distortions and sheker and exploitation of vulnerabilities that we have. But the point is a real point, but it's obviously they're just exploiting it and using it as a wedge to make something out of nothing. All right, we'll stop with the initial break. We'll talk a little bit of halacha of the Beit HaMitzadim, and then maybe a little Jewish about. We are now right in the middle now of the Beit HaMitzadim after Shavuos and Talmudim for the next few weeks. So we'll start talking about some of this in a moment.
Yeah.